November 11th, and it's Buffalo, New York, and we're going to do an interview with Ray Hoover at the Heathwood Rest Home in East Amherst.
I think the first time I went back, I crossed over through Little Birch there, you know, and I'm going up and over on the Mill Creek. And before I got up to the top of the hill, the water had run over, down over a flat rock to run clear across the. Then I had to get out and pick a fine stones and pile them up so I could get up over it. Now then, you want me to tell you about what?
Why don't you just start with your earliest recollections of when you were born and where you were born there?
Well, I was born in 1897, June 20th. There in Webster County, on Birch River, and I grew up there. And after I was old enough, naturally, I worked on the farm. I'd done anything and everything, from riding a horse to driving a horse. And by the time I was about 11 or 12, I worked some in the lumber woods. First job was over on the head of Poplar for the Tioga Lumber Company. After that, I worked on the sawmill at Skiles. I worked on them at Curtin and Hominy Falls, also Richwood.
Were they all band mills?
Band mill was, yeah, I don't think, I only worked a day or two on a little circular saw on right there on Birch River. Charles Hollingsworth had one up there where he lived, down below the road. I might have worked there a little, but not much.
Can we back up a little bit and ask you who your parents were?
Well, my father's name was William Henry Hoover, known mostly as Boone Hoover. My mother's name, maiden name, was Lucindy Marguerite Hoover. They were both Hoovers before they was married. And to this date, we find no relation whatsoever between the two of them. My father's people were all large people. My mother's people were mostly small. There was one or two pretty hefty ones, but most of them were small.
Where did your parents meet? Did they just always know each other?
Well, my father's people was there like in Braxton County, the edge of Braxton County there. My mother's people was up at the head of Birch. He went up Birch River and up on the top of the hill, and the first place to the left after you topped the hill was their place. Right at the top of the hill on the right was his brother, Wesley Hoover. He lived right at the top of the hill. How they met, I don't know. I understand that my father was 21 years old before he went to school, had any schooling. And in just a couple of years, he made himself into he got a number one grade for a school teacher at that time. And then after that, he taught school and had the farm. He got the farm. Maybe I'll tell you the story about that. Old John Boffman owned that place there on Burks River, and his relatives, well, he was pretty old, and his relatives had, they didn't want to help him or anything, apparently, and he offered my father and mother the place if they would come in and keep him the rest of his life. And the only thing he required that they kept his horse for him. See? And that's how they come to have that farm. He didn't last very long, I guess maybe a year or two, and I understand his horse got scared and run away and threw him off and dragged him quite a ways and killed him.
Well, that's interesting. Now, sort of a sad story.
My father died when I was about 2.5 years old. My mother later married about 4 years or 4 or 5 years afterwards, married one of, would have been his grandsons, the John Boffman's grandsons. And he turned out to be a heel. He burned the house down on us, see, actually. We know damn well he done it. And my Uncle Leet run him out of the country, and he had sense enough never to come back. And he didn't come back. Because he wouldn't have lasted more than a minute if he did.
Did you have brothers and sisters?
My one sister, May, is living there at Skiles right now, see? She's, Alden and her was over in Virginia, see? He worked for the government, you know, until he retired, and then they moved their trailer and come back down there.
So your father died when you were 2.5.
I was 2.5.
And then your mother remarried, and then the house burned when?
Yeah.
How old were you when the house burned?
Well, I was maybe about, I'd say 7 or 8 years old.
So what did your mother do then? Did she rebuild the house?
Well, she rebuilt the house. He tried to get her to deed him the farm, and she wouldn't do it. That's what caused, why he burned the house down. He had the idea that he could build a house and then claim the farm. Whether it was so or not, laws, I don't know. So after all, she lived and she got along. The neighbors, the relatives, and so forth, they done the work and kept up and helping, so she got along.
What about your schooling? Did you go to school there?
I had a little reading, writing, and arithmetic and geography and history, probably I don't think I spent as much time in school as kids do up to the third grade today.
Where was the school? Was it right?
Well, the first school was right on, you know, where the bottom is across from where DeLong's live there. The school at that time was right down at the lower end of that bottom, right almost at the Compton House. I had it there.
Did the wearing?
And then, the last schooling I had was after the Davis Aiken Lumber Company come in there, and the schoolhouse was built up there. The road goes up, you know, from where Byrne lives there. you go up and cross the creek over, and like there's a little level spot. Well, there's where the schoolhouse was built. There was a spring out in the back of it.
It's still standing. Yeah.
Huh?
It's not?
It's probably there yet. It might have dried up by this time. You know, they had a drought in that country several years ago, and a lot of places did dry up. Over on Dogway in the head of the Cranberry, I worked over in there. And going down Dogwood, the coldest spring water that I ever knew of in West Virginia was there. It come right out of the hill, like through a soapstone. There was a little soapstone out in front of where it come out, and somebody had cut a hole down in the soapstone, dug it out like a saucer. You could dip some water up, or you could lay down and drink out of it, and it was almost ice cold a year round.
So by the time you were 12 years old or so, you were really a man, weren't you?
That's right. I could swing an axe. I could help pull a crosscut saw.
What was it like on the farm? What did you raise?
What did I do on the farm?
What was raised on the farm?
What was raised? We raised corn, wheat, and oats, and sugar cane, made our own molasses, and all of it, raised everything we needed. Sweet potatoes, Irish potatoes, beans, cabbage, carrots, rhubarb. My mother had a row of rhubarb across the garden there. And boy, the stalks grew like almost as big as my wrist, and they'd see that long. We used to, I think it was a Squire Lumber Company, they come in there with a sawmill up on the top of Christ Mountain. That's where you go up some skiles there and up on the top of the mountain. We used to take rhubarb and stuff up there to their camp for them. We put the stalks down in a bag, two bags, and with nails pin the two bags together and hang them across the horse. And take them up there. That's the way we're going to do. No, I don't think you could have even pulled a sled up the path that went up over the hill there.
Did you keep much stock?
Huh?
Did you keep much stock there at the home place there?
Stock?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. We had, my mother didn't have too much, so I was got up to where I got along, and I started getting cattle, you know, and winter them over and feed them up till the next fall and sell them. At that time, the markets, you know, everything had to be drove to market, like the hogs or sheep or cattle.
Where was the market?
Well, they had to get them out to Cowan or over to Sutton or Flatwoods there, where they could get to the railroad train and ship them out.
Did you drive stock all the way to Flatwoods?
I helped drive it lots of times. Some of the people, some of the fellas used dogs to help them, you know, and I had one of them, he lived over there on Polemic Run. He bought up cattle, you know, and drive them into market. I helped him some. He claimed I was better than the dog.
Somebody told me, I'm not sure who it was, but they said they were telling me about driving stock up Birch River.
And yeah,
they
said, sure.
And they told me one time somebody drove a flock of turkeys through there.
Well, sure, they drove turkeys or geese or anything. That's the only way they could get them. sheep, you know, they had to cross the stream a lot of times going up the river in those days. And you know what? They used a goat to lead the sheep. They put a goat out in front, see? And then the sheep would follow him across the river. But if you drive the sheep up to the river themselves, one of them won't go in. They won't go in the water. But they'll follow a goat across. So they used a goat to lead the sheep.
Were there any particular varieties of seeds, beans, or corn, or anything like that that were passed down through your family?
Any particular
varieties of seeds?
Well, I don't know. We had mostly in my early days, we had nothing but white corn, you know. Well, and later yellow corn come in. And most of the guys kicked on it. They said that was only for the Negroes to eat. It's a little stronger than the white meal, white corn, you know. Of course, everything you had to either put up or manufacture. We had a grist mill on our place. We ground our own corn and stuff, the same for a lot of the neighbors. Dennis Barnett right above us had a mill. He done some grinding.
Was there any smiths in the neighborhood then, blacksmiths?
Plenty of snakes.
I said smiths, blacksmiths.
Oh, yeah, well, nearly everybody could do blacksmithing in those days. Oak Mollison had a blacksmith shop right there at where Byrne lives. There, right, almost at the bridge there. See, he had a shop in there. He done blacksmithing, and my grandfather done a lot of blacksmithing there. He had a place. He stayed there with my mother a lot. See. And he could do almost anything. There's a cane setting over there that he made. This is laurel, say, rhododendron, you know, see. Now, he either found this piece that bent that way or else he heated it and bent it, see. I wouldn't know about that, but the rest of that stuff, that's all handwork. And on the bottom, he took the brass ferrule of a shotgun shell and put it on there to be the bottom. Aunt Lydia was up here with me, and she had it after he died, and she had it with her. And when she went back to West Virginia, then she didn't take it. And it was down in my basement over on Dartmouth Street in Buffalo. I had the stroke. They had nothing but those little flimsy canes and so forth, and Fritz said to me, this cane was down in the basement, you know, and she brought it over to the hospital to him, and hell, it was perfect. But I took the shotgun ferrule off of it, the brass ferrule, and got a rubber and put on it, so it...
If you were to go from your home place and go up the river, yeah, could you name the people who lived up the river?
Up the river? All right, and I'll begin right there where Byrne is. Oak Mollison lived there. Coming up, the next one, Irv Case lived. The next one was right where that little branch comes down. was old man DeLong. That's Claude's grandfather. He lived there. The next, Albert Compton lived. He had a like a store, you know, where they could buy a few things. In later years, the Whalings come in there. Compton said, I don't remember where they moved to, but two of the boys grew up and they got to be telegraph operators for the railroads and so forth. Albert, the last, I guess he died over at Camden on Gauley. He was there. The other one, he was at Orlando for a long time. I guess died there. After they left there, I never knew much of them. They knew about them. Well, then continuing up from there, the next one was our place, see, where Claude DeLong and them are there. The next one was Dennis Barnett. He was over on the left side of, well, the road goes right by his place now. Next one was Dave Barnett. He lived over across, up on the hill, like. The next one was the McCoys. That's right where the falls are. And the next one was Boggs. Let's see, what was his name? I'll think of it in a minute. Boggs lived there. And the next one on the other side was Annis Boggs. Harvey Boggs was the first one. He had that big place there for quite a strip, almost up to where that Barnett Run comes down, on both sides of the river. Then Annis lived up there. He had a store, a little store. The next one, I don't know. I know the place, but I can't think of the next one's name. The next one was, now wait a minute. Their name slips me too.
How about
skipping on up there for a place where that's Bragg Run that comes down from up there. And I know there was a bunch of Braggs lived up in there. In fact, one of my first cousins married a Bragg girl. He died at Richwood's and lived up there. As far as I know, she's still living. I haven't heard of whether she died or dead or not, but if she's still living, she was living in pretty good shape the last time I was down there. That was about 5 years ago.
You mentioned the McCoys at the falls?
Huh?
You mentioned the McCoys at the
McCoys
falls?
McCoys was at the fall. They had a mill and the used the water power from up on the falls to run the mill.
Was that about the biggest mill on the river? Was that about the biggest mill along the river?
No, I wouldn't say it was the biggest. I wouldn't say it was. I think maybe we had the biggest one right there at Skiles. You know, at Skiles where we live.
What powered your mill?
Huh?
What powered your mill?
Water. We had a water dam built up, you know, and with a fish ladder on it, so that got up, there was plenty of room for it to run down. Fish would go up and down the river. My grandfather built that.
Did you ever know Rattlesnake Bill Doddrell?
Rattlesnake Bill Doddrell, so help me. Yeah, I knew him. I knew him, you know, as a kid. And when I used to go back there, one time I was back, and of course I had a few quarts of good whiskey with me. My mother was running a boarding house there at Skiles, and little Rattlesnake, he happened to stop there, you know, and I asked him if he'd have a drink, and he said, sure. So I set out a glass for him, I set the bottle out to help himself. He took a regular water glass and poured it full. I thought, oh boy. And he sat there and sipped it like a cat licking cream. Oh, boy.
How about you telling us a little bit about Jappy Collins?
Well, old Jappy, as I say, he lived back there on the top of the hill from us. And he had a nice big orchard. He put in the best orchard that I can remember seeing any place in West Virginia. He had all kinds of apples up there. In fact, after I come up here, my mother sent me a barrel of his apples from up there. He raised up quite a family. Ray and Dewey was just about my age, I think. Ray was a little bit older, and Dewey about the same. And then they come down there on Birch, and they've continued there. I don't think old Jappy ever worked for anybody on a job. I can't remember him doing it, but maybe he did.
People tell me he sang some old songs.
Huh?
People tell me he sang old songs.
Yeah, sure, he sang a lot of songs, different ones. I can't remember them. One thing I do remember from him, I've heard him say that, like he seems to have gotten the information out of the Bible, that eventually men would be flying like birds. Now, that was before they come along with, the Wright brothers come along with an aeroplane to fly. Now, that's so help me. I've heard him say that. I heard him say that lots of times.
Do you remember the first airplane you ever saw?
That I ever saw? The first one I ever saw was tied together with bale hay wire, and I was up in it. All right. this was up here, you know, Stephen. I got acquainted with some guy from, he was selling gasoline, you know, or distributing it in it some way. I don't remember just what his business was. His father was down in Washington. And he was here quite often. He flew back and forth. I don't know how I come to meet him, but anyway, I did. And he was flying, so he invited me to go up with him. I went up. Open cockpit, and I'm telling you, it was just tied together with bale hay wire. Well, I think my mother flew a time or two when they first come into West Virginia. Somebody come in over there near Richwood. They had a little airfield. She went up. I brought her up there once or twice in an airplane. But that was in the, after the days when we had airplanes.
Oh. Well, maybe we could go back to the woods and the mills and get you to tell us a little bit about the different.
Well, I don't know that there's much more than I can tell you.
When did the mill come into Skiles? When did they put the mill in on at the mouth of Skiles?
When did they put it in? Oh, I don't know, but I would say around 1910 or 11. Maybe as late as 1912. I know it was about that time.
And when they put that mill in, is that when they took the timber out of Birch?
And the what?
When they put the Aikens mill in,
yeah.
Is that when they took the timber out all the way up Birch?
And no, they took that out later, I think. They took it out after I left. Before that, it was I think from up in in the Powell's Creek section, I think down in there, and maybe even down a little farther below Birch, that they was getting it. I don't know.
Did they log Skiles?
They logged all around there. They logged what is it, White Oak and Shingle Tree, where they come in, and all the way along there. My mother had done some cooking for a camp right there at the mouth of Shingle Tree.
So I guess you've seen some big trees in your time. Huh? I guess you saw some of the big trees.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. Over on the curtain line there, I can remember helping lay a big poplar down. It was 7 feet across the stump and 60 feet to the first limb. 60 feet to the first limb. Jim Comstock had a picture in the...
Hillbilly.
In the Hillbilly, some time ago, showing one farther, a big poplar farther south, see, it's some lumber company. I showed it to a lot of them around here, and the boy, they couldn't imagine such a tree. But if you don't think the chopper and the cutting crew sweat when he was trying to lay that one down and not break it up, If you'd let it down, it'd mow a lot of good timber down, and if hit a rock or a high spot or something, it'd break it up or break it in two. They wanted to lay it down so that it hit pretty level, when it hit the ground. And all we had was a 9-foot cross-cut saw to cut the 7-foot foot tree down. So you have to go a little this way and that way and so on.
How long did it take?
Oh, I wouldn't remember that.
All day?
I don't know. We wasn't all day at it. After we got ready to lay it down, he cut some of the smaller stuff out that was big enough to cut out. That was cut out and got out of the way, and then laid the big one down.
Page to room 272, please.
Mike and I are musicians.
Yeah.
And we like old time music.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you could tell us what the music was like.
I happen to be a guy, there's not much music in my system, there was plenty of mostly string music, banjo and fiddle and violin and so on, juice harp and so forth. My grandfather could make a juice harp talk.
Assistant to room 272, please.
We had the old square dances, and we always had music of some kind.
People have told me a lot about a fiddle player who lived over the mountain in Erbakin.
He was lived where?
He lived in Erbakin.
Well, Jack Wayne. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you heard him play?
Sure. I've stayed at his house. He used to live there in Erbakin. You went over from where the railroad tracks is. You went across the bottom a little ways and around the side of the hill, not too far from the town of Erbakin.
What sort of a natured man was he?
Oh, he was a happy-go-lucky. He worked enough to raise his living and so forth. My mother took a job running a boarding house at Palmer while I was still down there. Well, I wasn't a kid yet. She got over there. Of course, she wanted her cow so she could have milk and butter and so forth. So he and I drove the cow from over on Birch over to Erbakin and out by his place and down the holler there, down to Elk River, and across the Elk River, down just about at the mouth of that run that come in there. I think a gum family lived on the other, like on the other side. We crossed over there where there was a little, where the water wasn't too high, on down to the mouth of the one that comes in there, Holly River empties in. And there was a footbridge across Holly over to where the boarding house was on that side. The cow walked across her bridge over on that side. We kept her over down on the bottom there. There was a barn for her and plenty of pasture. And we pastured her some on the other side of the river, too. There's a dam there for the saw logs for the mill. There was a mill right where Holly empties into Elk. There was a mill there.
Were there a lot of new people coming into the country at that time? Bohunks and Italians to build the trains?
Well, more Italians than anybody else. They'd come in, dug the for the roads for the logging and so forth. I can remember about the Italians. They bought the biggest shoes they could get. They said they wanted all the leather they could get for the money. They buy those shoes standing up about so high, you know. But they always wanted big ones. I never happened to work with any of them, but there was lots of them come in on that, done that kind of work.
And did they stay?
No, I don't remember any of them staying. If any of them come in and stayed after I was there, I wouldn't know, but I never seen anything of any of them when I was back down there. And I used to go back almost every year.
Did you work teams in the woods?
Huh?
Did you work teams in the woods?
That's what they worked. I never drove a team in the woods.
Did they have ox then? Or
talked to Burn Courtney there at Birch River about horse logging. He'll tell you. Burn drove horses all his life. He worked for Uncle Leet almost from a kid up.
How old is Burn now?
Huh?
How old is Burn
well,
now?
Well, Burn was his way up in the 90s. Now, just how old, I can't tell you, but I'll say he's over 95.
I know he's probably the oldest man in Birch River. They say he's probably the oldest man in Birch River.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised. The last Well, Bern and Delma, they write me every so often. Bern goes down. As I say, he worked for Uncle Lee. He drove team from almost from a kid up. When he come into the country, I guess he was an orphan, and some people named Burr raised him. And Uncle Lee lived over on Mill Creek there, up on top of the hill. And they lived right over the top of the hill where my grandfather's old place was. There's where the house sits there, up on the top of rocks. A big rock cliff goes right out from the house. That was my grandfather's place. And these Burrs come in there, and as I say, Burn was, I think, only a, well, he couldn't have been maybe 10 or 12 or something. And then the way Uncle Lee lived over, just over the top of the hill there. And for some reason, he took log jobs, you know, see, and I guess maybe at times he had maybe six or seven teams going. And drivers, Burn drove them for years for him.
When did the Hoovers come into that country?
That I can't tell you. I could have told you more. I had a book with Glendalene had drummed up, but she's got a lot of history of the Hoover family, and she's been back all the way to try to find out where there was any relation between the two Hoover families, and she didn't find any of it. But I had a copy of it here, and when Mary Lou was here the last time, I turned it over to give it to her, see? It goes on to give the history of the Hoovers and the McIlwains, the Woodses, and so forth. See? Now, there's somebody that can tell you more about the Hoover family than I can, Glendalene DeLong. See? Because she dug it up, a lot of it. Robert was down there, and he seen it, and he wanted to bring it up and copy it, see? So he brought it up, and then he sent it over here to me to see if I could tell him any more about it, and I put in my 2 cents worth. And instead of him getting it stuff through and sending it back to her, he didn't do it. And I was down there, and she told me about it, that he hadn't sent the book back. Well, I come back, and I got on his tail, and he got the lead out and sent it back to her. And in the meantime, while I had it here, I took it had it all copied. All I had to do was take it downstairs, and the girl copy anything I want.
I'll
give you fellas if I can get my finger.